good morning, Greg.
G'day, KB. Look, I'm not really sure about the white hat tonight. All I've seen is the white flag so far. But, I mean, you've got a club there that's won 8 out of their last 30 and never beaten Geelong at Etihad Stadium. So I can't see where there's going to be any white knight, any hero tonight. But I do think that the fuse was lit. Won't be lit tonight. There's no doubt about that. It was lit yesterday. I think that what Mick Malthouse did at that press conference was unbelievable. And
Has there been any response from Carlton to Mick's comments regarding a rebuild?
Oh, look, I know that they're not happy at all this morning, and I know that I think that he'll be given a bit of a talking to. I was pretty sure prior to yesterday, and I think they were, that he would see out the season and he wouldn't be sacked. But I would think after the comments yesterday, it was pretty much us against them, us being the playing group and myself, Mick, against the administrators. Just as he did at Collingwood, John Ralph's alluded to it today. We've alluded to it in The Australian. He's declared war, and he thinks he'll win this one. I think it's just going to make the club further uneasy, and there's certainly no guarantee now after his actions yesterday that he will even see the season out. And probably he has actually challenged the club yesterday just to see how strong it is. And
You think that yesterday Mick virtually was daring Carlton to sack him?
Look, he's gone past Jock McHale's record. He's got his little personal achievement. His team can't fire. So he's declared war on his administrators yesterday for not giving him a contract extension. There's no two ways about it, just like he did with Gary Peart and Eddie at Collingwood. So he went into that press conference with a premeditated plan, and the comments basically have turned him into yesterday's man, because he'll never coach again now, not that he would have anyway. But I don't think now, after that, well, not that I don't think, there's some chance now that he may not see out the season. And it's his own fault, if that's the case. But, I mean, just some of the stuff he said yesterday, Kevin, was just bordering on... I mean, he mentioned how hard it was for players down there on 4- and 5-year contracts, for example, right?
Being part of a rebuild.
Well, there's only two players down there that are contracted beyond 3 years, and that's the captain and vice-captain. And they've been there for a long time. And he did not get them into the footy club. They've been there forever. So I don't know what he's on about, really. But, as I said, a premeditated attack on the Carlton administration, and I think there's going to be some serious talks if they're not happening already this morning.
So you're suggesting that Carlton's hierarchy is going to call Mick Malthouse in this morning and have a crack at him over what he said yesterday about
game,
the rebuild.
Today's game day, whether it's this morning or tomorrow or Sunday or Monday, whatever. But there's no doubt that they'll be having a chat to Mick about the comments. I think even the Herald Sun today, even Ralphie in his comment piece, he said it reeks of willful disobedience, which I totally agree. When I heard that yesterday, I thought, well, here we go again. Just the same pattern, Kevin. The same pattern as what happened to... It cost Carlton a premiership. It cost Collingwood a premiership. And Carlton people are actually lucky that they're down the bottom and it's not going to really cost them that much. But it cost Collingwood a premiership. He's going down the same path.
Well, maybe that lit the fuse yesterday. So it's up to the players tonight. And I'd like to hear from Carlton fans, also Geelong fans. Geelong's got a pretty good side in tonight. It's a good opportunity for Geelong to, you know, have a good win. But if Carlton can respond... That's why I said...
Well, how can they respond?
Well, they've got some good players there.
I suppose Richmond responded last week, didn't they?
I mentioned good players in my take. Mark Murphy and Yaron and Gibbs and Simpson and Thomas and Carrazzo and Judd. Mm. They're all good players capable of playing very good football. So, collectively, they've got to get together with their players and they've got to say, listen, we've done a lot of talking, but we've actually got to produce something tonight. We've actually got to play with energy and spirit and some urgency. And we've got to play with enthusiasm. We've actually got to show that we want to actually play this game for this club. So if they don't show that tonight after should have lost by 25 goals last week, Greg, if they don't respond tonight, then that's what I'm saying. A bomb will go off in the place. Yeah. Because if they were to lose
I think the bomb's
15 goals or 16 goals like they did last week, well, then I'm not quite certain anyone can actually stop the explosion that's going to take place at Carlton.
Do you think if you've played 35 players at senior level this year that you're in a rebuild? Do you think that if you've made 10 unenforced changes last week and this week, do you reckon you're in a rebuild, Kev?
Well, I think Carlton have said they're in a rebuild. This is the point. I mean,
I'm asking you. Well, Mick doesn't like it. I mean,
what I'm saying is, I think Mick is saying that Judashay and Stephen Trigg didn't consult him about whether or not they were going to be in a rebuild as the coach, and therefore they've come out and said we're in a rebuild. Whereas Mick is saying, well, I never said we're in a rebuild. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll take your calls, 9429 11 16. It's a big round of football, round 8 of football. There's some very, very big games coming up. But the Giants against Adelaide, just to see how good the Giants are. Hawthorn and Sydney, of course, a replay of the grand final. You may want to make some comments about that. Can North Melbourne got some injured players go across the Fremantle and knock off the top dogs over there? And there's an interesting game on the Sunday with Port Adelaide, of course, and the Tigers. That's a replay.
Kane Corns is 300th, last game.
And a replay of last year's first final as well. Greg, as you know, is always brought to you by the Spread Eagle Hotel. He no longer lives there. Still on the corner of Coppin Street, of course, 372 Bridge Road in Richmond. Don't ring Greg on that famous number, 9428-6895. He won't answer it, but the Spread Eagle Hotel will, because they've got their super chef down there, and his special meal this week is Venom Humble Pie. Give him a call down at the Spread Eagle, 9428-6895. Welcome back. It's 20 minutes past 9. We're taking your calls as we lead into a big weekend of sport. Have your say, 9429 1116. Paul's out on the road. G'day, Paul.
Hey, Kev.
Yes, Paul.
Look, just a quick one. Is Greg there, is he?
Yes, hey, Greg Paul. Denham's here.
I want to give you a little bit of information. I've just finished a PhD study, which has taken about 10 years. And I want to give you some information. The problem with Carlton, and I get annoyed at the lack of respect that's being shown to the man who just completed passing
Jock McHale's
record.
Yep.
I mean, you know, Mick's achievements and contribution to AFL football have been nothing short of absolutely outstanding.
Yep, extraordinary.
Now, the problem with Carlton is not skills as far as their ability to kick, mark, handball, run, that sort of thing.
It's mental. Is it mental?
Well, it's you can call it group mental, if you like. With a bottom side, and I've been there and done this a couple of times, and once at the AFL level, as you know, Kev, it's not the skills that are the problem by the time they reach professional status.
Yeah, but Mick said it's a lack of confidence brought on by the talk of a rebuild. Simple as that. That's what Mick said, and that's what we're all doubting.
To do obviously is get people off the wagon of you know, they're rebuilding, they're no good, and all this sort of stuff. The guy's ability to perform their skills is not the problem, but what perhaps Mick has to think about, and I'm not telling him how to suck eggs. How could you with a man like that? But what they have to think about is how they can develop their own game plan based around their side, what they've got, rather than a hypothetical game plan based on perhaps a Hawthorn's.
Well, I think they're doing that, and it's clearly not working. There's no game plan. There's nothing. Nothing's happening. And don't forget, this is from the man that said at the club's pre-season launch in March, it's a very, very difficult to see where we're going to lose a game this year.
So are you saying, Paul, that they're playing a game plan that doesn't suit their personnel?
Well, I'm saying that because their personnel are not short. If you measured on a scale the skill levels, you put down, say, 10 skills, and you measured, and this has been borne out by an extensive study carried out in the States on drafting, if you measured their skills against Hawthorn's, you wouldn't get more than a 10.
Yeah, but we know that. Experience. We know that. What are you saying? We know that. It's clear. There's not much skill there.
So is it just the game plan, is it, Paul?
It's a playing structure, Kev. It's not that the skills aren't there, as you just said, Greg. The skills are there. It's how you utilise them.
Okay. Well, if you agree or disagree with Paul, he believes Carlton can be pretty skillful side, and if you line them up against Hawthorn, well, their skills wouldn't be that much
inferior. What Paul's saying is they've got the wrong people, they've got the wrong development people there, they've got the wrong coaching panels there, because he thinks they've got the skill and they're not being produced.
Well, they've got to play a different set of Well, a different game plan with the group of players they've got. You can't imitate, say, a side like Hawthorn. You've got to actually come up with a game plan that suits the players and the skills they have. Paul, thanks for that. Fred's from Mill Park. G'day, Fred.
Yeah, hello, Kevin. Hello, Greg.
G'day, Freddie.
Kevin, you know, you're not going to find more of a blue bagger than myself, but I'd just like to make a comment on your opening remarks about how in the Westerns the good guys come in at the last moment and spoil the party.
Yep.
Fortunately, Kevin, that's fiction. What we've got here is non-fiction. And I don't think we've got a hope in hell of winning tonight. I hope we do. But well, I've seen us this year and we're just not playing with it. We're not playing like we want to win, to be honest.
I don't think you have to actually win tonight, Fred. But, you know, I do think that, you know, collectively those players that we mentioned in the take, that together as the leaders of that club, they've got to actually make a pact between themselves and then get to the rest of the players to just outline just how important it is tonight for Carlton to be competitive, because it is fiction, you know, those Western serials, but, you know, it plays out in real life. There's a fuse lit down at Carlton at the moment and someone's got to try and snuff it out. And the only way you can snuff it out is by putting up a good competitive performance. And, Fred, as you know, if they turned up and played like they did last week against the Giants, well, the whole place will explode.
But I'm telling you, Kevin, it won't explode to the extent of what the administration's trying to do. They're going to back to square one. They're going back with Silvani, etc., and they're going to start again this year and particularly next year. They're starting again. So it's not going to explode for them. But what it will do, it may do, is explode for the coach.
Alan joins us in Hong Kong. G'day, Al.
Morning.
G'day. Thanks for listening.
No worries. I came to Australia in 2000 and a mate of mine coerced me into barracking for the Blues, and I'm quite a fanatical Blues supporter.
Good on you.
So it wasn't actually a good start.
Probably wasn't a real good mate in hindsight either.
No. I just got one question. And was it Greg Swan who appointed Michael Malthouse? It was, wasn't it?
Well, he was CEO. The board would have appointed Mick, but he was the CEO at the time.
Yeah, and I mean, if it was a good decision or not, hindsight is a beautiful thing, but I think he still has a fair bit to answer for, because, you know, what happened since he left the club, he might have known. He might have seen that the ship was sinking. He thought, you know, as captain, I might leave and go to Brisbane.
Alan's suggesting that Greg Swan could see what was going to take place at the Blues. So
well, I don't think
put
Greg,
up his hand and,
I don't
and
think
went
Greg
to
Swan
Brisbane.
Actually put up his hand and left. I think there was pressure for... And Swan had been there for quite a while too, I might add, and was probably ready for a change. But I don't think that he just volunteered, said at the start of the year, oh, look, this will be my last year, whatever. I think there was a sort of a pact made between administration and himself that his time was ready. Look... I think that a lot of clubs would have probably picked up Mick Malthouse if they were in a similar position.
Greg would have played a role because he knew Mick, of course, as a friend from the Collingwood days, and the board. But the board,
of course, he played a role.
The board, in the end, had to make a decision on who they wanted to replace Brett Ratten.
Yeah.
Al, thanks for that. Keep listening in Hong Kong. Trout's in Woodend. G'day, Trout.
Hello, KB. Hello, Greg.
Trout.
Now, Greg, you seem to know a lot. I just want to know if you can give me a bit of advice. What size steak I need to get cut for the end of the year from having me free lunch?
A minute steak, mate, because that's all you'll be getting. I'm giving you the tip. You still think the Tigers will make the eight?
Okay. Are you saying we won't?
No.
No, well of course. Well, you said we weren't going to win last week, and we did. And I believe that you put pressure on KB there to make him pick Collingwood.
He hasn't tipped you this week again, I can see.
Reverse psychology, Trout. I want to see the Tigers play two good games in a row. That's what I want to see. Trout, thanks for that. Graham's in Heidelberg. G'day, Graham.
G'day, how you going?
Good, thank you.
Good, pal.
One question, or a couple of questions maybe, but at that press conference yesterday with Mick Malthouse, why didn't the reporters pull him up on some of the porkies that he was talking about, like that the rebuild was a media construct when his own president said they were rebuilding, and discussion about contracts and forgetting there's only two players that had a five-year contract and they were there before he was there. Those things you brought up earlier, why weren't they challenged by the reporters during that press conference?
Look, I did a bit of homework since, and I don't think it's common knowledge that there's only two players that are there now with contracts beyond 3 years. So that's one thing, Graham. I think that the way Mick phrased it yesterday, that he basically said, whether it be the club or the press that have said that we're rebuilding, he was a little bit mischievous. I understand that. But, I mean,
But I think some of those press conferences, Graham, these days, really dial a quote. I mean, people are sent along to the press conferences to, you know, gather the audio and what's been said, and then, you know, report that back. And then that's just reported back as a factual story. It's not a press conference, Greg, where you debate topics or what people say. It's not that sort of forum. I mean, the coach comes out and says certain things. People get it on their tape recorder, they take it back, and they write it and repeat it as verbatim, as a news story that Mick Malthouse says, you know, doesn't understand the rebuild, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not really a forum where people go there and question what you're saying.
Look, you can, but normally not. But I mean,
but I mean,
you could have gone there yesterday.
But the leading journos who would do that don't go to those press conferences,
no,
do they?
No, but for example, you could have gone there yesterday and said, well, what are you talking about, Mick? Last week against GWS, after the game, you said the difference in talent was extraordinary. And you said, unfortunately, we haven't got the manpower to go with them.
But you didn't go to the press conference yesterday.
No, I didn't.
But you're a leading football writer. Why didn't you go to the press conference?
Well, Kevin, I was down the AFL after here trying to sort of catch up on Father-Son Academies as well. And we've plenty of things to do. But
you don't generally go to press conferences, do you?
Not always, no.
Because you think they're just the run of the mill.
No. Well, no, I wouldn't say that at all. I'd say that sometimes we don't have staffing levels to go everywhere. So you've got to be on top of everything.
A break. We'll come back and we'll take more of your calls as we lead into a huge weekend of football and a huge weekend of sport. What's on your mind? You can always set the sporting agenda. As you know, Greg is no longer brought to you by the Spread Eagle Hotel because it's right in the heart of Tigerland, 372 Bridge Road in Richmond. It's on the corner of Coppin Street, and it's a pretty classy establishment down there, and we don't tolerate yobbos like Greg. They've disassociated themselves from Greg. He doesn't live there anymore. In fact, this week the chef's special is Venom Humble Pie. So come on down for your serve. 94286895 is their famous.
I don't know where it would leave Chris Grant and I. Like I said, you know what? It is quite interesting that, I don't know, for a hell of a lot of years I did have the same opinion, but I think now if everyone, you look at the facts of how we're actually going to vote for the award, I think they have changed. At the end of the day, is it going to alter my life whether I get it or not? No, it'd be awesome for my kids, yes. But in terms of, I think the whole criteria around it, and I'll be consistent in it, is over summer, we change the rules how you win one of our best awards in the land.
There was Corey McKernan. You may like to give your thoughts on that, 9429 1116. He was talking on the Footy Show last night about the rules of change for the Brownlow Medal. And I suppose what he's doing is looking at the incident that cost him the Brownlow Medal and also cost Chris Grant the Brownlow Medal, and saying in today's game that would be probably more likely a fine and no loss of the Brownlow
really?
Medal.
Really? What, we didn't know that?
Well,
it's been in vogue for 6 months, Kevin.
We've
changed the eligibility.
But we've seen it, Greg. We've seen it in action. Well, where, I mean, even Dustin Fletcher, who's playing game number 399, has missed games during his career because he did exactly what Fife did. That would have cost Fletcher any opportunity of winning a Brownlow Medal.
Kevin, go back to the previous tribunal system under Neil Bizzy, for example. Striking, you never got off a striking charge.
Correct, but now you do.
Well, they've changed the rules, for God's sake.
Well, we're saying, Greg, and I've said all
tell
along...
Tell me if you like
now,
the rule
on,
change.
Hang on, Greg.
Don't tell me
hang
they've
on,
changed the rules.
I've always maintained that a suspended player should be able to win the Brownlow Medal. Because even with the Fife, you know when the Fife thing happened, everyone's talking about Fife. Oh, he's favourite for the Brownlow Medal. Oh, he was favourite last year and he was suspended and he nearly won the Brownlow, beat on the last vote of the night. And now he's got reported again. Oh, this is terrible. So it all comes back to he could win the Brownlow
Medal.
We'll
make it. That's
now,
fine.
Now,
but
if
change the rule again, Greg, and drop out the
Greg,
fairest.
If that,
have it the best player, like but, the MVP.
But, Greg, if that, well, you don't need the fairest. That's ridiculous. But the fact is, Greg, everyone speaks about the Brownlow first, then the report. Now, if you could win the Brownlow without the report, you know, people wouldn't be concerned about Fife. They'd be saying, you know what, he stuck his leg out and he tripped the bloke. He should get a week or 2 weeks. And everyone moves on. Now, if he's good enough to win the Brownlow Medal then, he's good enough to win the Brownlow Medal. But it always gives you the feeling, Greg, that people making these decisions say, oh, look, if we rubbed him out or we ticked the wrong box, he could lose the Brownlow Medal. I don't think those people should have that in the back of their minds, Greg.
We'll make another rule change and get rid of the fairest bit and away you go. You'll get your way.
Well, Greg, people are going to continue to play and poor old Corey McKernan and Chris Grant don't have the highest award in the game where they had the most votes. simply because back then they just rubbed them out, Greg.
Oh, they were dead stiff. I'd be happy to give them medals in retrospect.
Well, so they should. And the only way they can do that, in my opinion, is to say, you know, now you don't have to worry about being reported. It's archaic, Greg. Tim's in Footscray. G'day, Tim.
Oh, g'day, mate. Look, I agree with your sentiment. It's ridiculous that they couldn't look at those reports this week in isolation, but rather had to put the Brownlow. So I think it showed why people outside of Victoria don't trust the AFL to investigate themselves, because this is the result the AFL wanted. This is Mark Evans' result. He wants the good players out there. So Fife and Johnson. Johnson's playing Friday night football.
I don't. How is he playing this? How's he playing, Tim? How did he get off that, Stevie Johnson? That's one of the great wonders of the world.
Should be splitting packs, not sacks. It was ridiculous. Oh. Now, with the if Kobe Stevens had tackled Nate Fyfe like that, there would have been a huge debate, Kevin. Like you say, it's a bloody dangerous thing. I was out there at the Western Oval when Peter Foster got his leg broken. You know, this match review panel tribunal, it's just Mark Evans' mates, ingrates, and yes men. You know,
but they made it. They made a rule change.
You couldn't get a bigger trip than what happened.
I think
on Kobe Stevens.
Look, I understand that.
Took his legs from underneath
but
him,
they,
Greg,
Kevin,
threw him up in the air, and landed on his backside.
But Kevin, at least they charged him with intentional conduct, okay? Now, you can
disagree.
Did they
take into account,
you can,
did they
hang
take
on.
Into account the opportunity,
potential
of doing damage?
Well, probably not, because I think they judged it as low, I think.
But
from
did they do that
memory.
With the Hawthorn boys?
No, they didn't. So,
yes,
so,
they did.
Yeah, they. What I'm saying is they didn't give it low. Of course, they took the potential in
yes.
the, and graded
so
it.
So why did they
it
not
it
do it with Fife?
Well, Kevin,
because of the Brownlow medal?
Why didn't Steve Johnson
the
go
Brownlow,
for a deliberate, intentional punch to the groin? I can't believe it.
Well,
I can't answer
why. Well,
that's
a Comedy Channel show, that is.
Well,
I mean,
we
the
know
Match
that.
Panel
we know that.
But
what,
on
let
that.
Me get back to the rule change was made because a lot of people, including very smart columnists, etc., thought that it was harsh not to win the Brownlow medal if you got 100 base points. So therefore, now they made it, you have to be suspended. And I think that's fine. But then don't reflect that decision back on other poor decisions that you've made during the week or whatever at the match review panel. I mean, I think, you know, but in all honesty, I like the fact that you can be suspended, that you can be go for, say, a charge like tripping, not be suspended and still win the Brownlow. Once you're suspended, you're gone.
Am I correct in saying, Greg, that we have, you know, if you get hit in the head, obviously that's high and that, you know...
Well, it's not obviously high.
No,
oh, you
no.
mean high contact.
If you get hit in the head, it's high contact, right?
Yes.
High contact.
Yes.
If you get hit in the groin, is there not a rule in AFL saying that
yes.
if you get hit in the groin, even though it's in the lower part of your body...
You assess it as high contact.
You assess it as high contact.
Yes, there is a rule.
So therefore, Stevie J should have been intentional, high contact, and then either... Well, it's got to be at least medium.
Yep.
It's got to be at least medium.
Yep.
How he never got rubbed out.
I got no idea.
One of the
idea.
Greatest mysteries that
it is
the history
probably,
of the match review panel.
It probably is the greatest mystery in the history of the match review panel.
Pete's in Arden Street. G'day, Pete.
Good morning, boys. Gee, footy's a passionate thing, isn't it?
We love
it. I've got some positive news for Carlton supporters, Kev.
Good. That's what
now,
we want.
Like you, Kevin, even though I think Carlton is total rubbish, I have a lot of respect for them.
Yep.
And I think they've got to look on the good side of things. They are the only team that have won in New Zealand this year, Kevin. And that puts them on top of the NZ ladder. So, come on, Blues. We know you can do it. We know you can do it. You've got the form in New Zealand. Just bring it back to Australia.
Well, they surely have played well overseas, no doubt about that.
Well, they played
got
better,
that win.
Play better overseas than Eddie had, you could say. Yep. They moved to the MCG, got an extra game at the MCG. That was a good move, wasn't it? To accommodate the large amount of people that want to go and watch them play. How many did they get last week? 16,500.
That's an interesting stat you told us before, Greg, that in 13 meetings at Etihad Stadium, Carlton has never, ever defeated Geelong.
We'll be going in very confident tonight, I would think.
Let's go to Anthony, who joins us in Preston. G'day, Anthony.
Morning, boys. The
G'day.
Problem at Carlton is the buffoon of a president who, after two rounds, starts stating that we're in a rebuild. Why not state it at the end of last year or at the end of this year? And I mean, everyone knows we're going to rebuild. So keep it in-house. Let Mick do his job.
Well, if you know it's going to be a rebuild, why keep it in-house?
Well, why bring it out and sap all the energy of the players after two
games? Well, I don't think it's sapping the energy of the players. Mick's telling us it is. I'm not so sure it is.
Well, how would you feel after two games of football if your president comes out and you're 25 and he says we're in a rebuild stage? Would you want to be there in...
Well, if you're 25 and you're playing at the footy club, right, and you don't know you're in a rebuild stage when you've played 35 players already this year, there's something wrong with you. But, you shouldn't be there.
But, Greg, after round two, what Anthony is saying, it was a bit premature, don't you think?
I don't...
Now, Judashay is a new president and maybe he felt he had to make some comment.
Look, the guys... Let's face it.
Was the wrong comment to make at that stage.
There's only one way to go in football and you know people don't do it, and that's to be totally honest. And he was totally honest and I'll never knock anyone who's totally honest, even if it hurts.
Do you think... Well, do you think when you say totally honest, Greg, that might have been his opinion, but do you think he should have actually consulted with the coach to say, how are we going? Do you think we're... I don't know
that he didn't. Do you?
Well, Mick Malthouse has quite clearly said that he would never have said they're in a rebuild.
Well, Mick says a lot of things, Kev.
A break. We'll come back. We'll take more of your calls. 9-4-2-9-11-16. I'm tipping Geelong tonight, Greg. You're tipping?
Yeah, Cats.
Do you want to pump up your side leading to this week, or you want to give a whack? 9-4-2-9-11-16, 0-4-3-3-98-11-16. The teams are out. Greg, just quickly before we go to our callers, the father and son rule, they all got together yesterday. Has that all been ticked off?
And the academy rule too, pretty much the same thing. Yes, it has been ticked off, Kevin. It's harder than the Duckworth-Lewis system to work out, but I'll make it very, very easy.
And yes, just explain to the listeners.
And give you an example of how basically it's going to work from now on.
We'll make it simple.
But it's very, very complicated.
Can you simplify it?
I will. And points start at, you know, the first pick in the draft is 3,000 and it works down. But let's just look at young Isaac Heaney from last year. He went, was picked up. Melbourne bid for him. He was a academy player, of course. They offered pick 2. So Sydney had to use their pick 18, right? Under the new system, if the offer was from pick 2, Sydney would have to give up pick 18, 37, 38 and 57. So that's about how it works.
Yep.
At the top end of the scale, it gets easier down the bottom. You can be in negative figures, if you like, and carry it over to next year. So it's not exactly future draft picks, but you can carry a negative balance over to the following year. You can be in minus, which you would have to use early in the next year's draft. But it's very, very complicated. I think that we've really got to get our head around this. It'll
and on the night of the draft, are they actually going to bid for father and sons
and also academy players? Not necessarily. Waiting for, I think, technology from Champion Data to see if it actually can be done during the draft program, or they will do it just before. But I think they're working to throw it all inclusive with the actual draft selections on draft night.
Tim has joined us in Craigieburn. What's to talk about, Stevie J? Good day, Tim.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good, pal.
Just with Stevie J getting off for that incident, I'm pretty sure James Kelly would be glad that they're playing on the same team.
Well,
I tell you what, James Kelly, I know James Kelly is back this week, and good luck to him because that was a nasty injury. And he said he's not going to wear any protective box. Yeah. He used one in training, found it a little bit uncomfortable. Just says he hopes that, you know, he doesn't get a knock in that region. So he'd be very, very hopeful that someone like Stevie J, when the ball's 2 metres away, doesn't close his fist and the chop-down action and hits him in the testicles and then have the match review panel claim that he was trying to win possession of the ball.
I have never heard...
So I agree with you there,
so
Tim.
Much bunkum in my life when I got the match review panel deliberations through on Monday. That beggars belief. And do you know that Mark Evans has...
Should nearly be sacked.
Mark Evans actually...
You should nearly
role.
Sack him for making that decision.
Well, I don't know which of the four, how many of the three of the four, I don't know actually who sat on Monday, but... They're only new. They've only been in the caper for a couple of months, but that was absolutely outrageous. And Mark Evans actually has the power to overrule them and make.
Can he sack them? Has he got the power to say, you know what?
Well, you know what?
You're sacked.
He should. Get another four. Another three or four.
Daniel's in Ringwood. G'day, Daniel.
It was an insult to your intelligence, wasn't it? Dan.
That's okay. Retrospective Brownlow medals. If Chris Grant was awarded a retrospective Brownlow medal, would you have to strip Robert Harvey of
because
Grant outpolled him on the night?
No, you'd, as Kevin's always said, you'd put a little asterisk there and you'd just explain what happened and you wouldn't. I wouldn't have thought so.
No, definitely not. No, he would retain his Brownlow medal and that asterisk would say... That,
at the time, it was the best and fairest. Now it's just the best. You could do that, couldn't you, Kev?
Well, you would just say that the rules of the award were changed, and as a result, a retrospective Brownlow was awarded to Chris Grant.
Yeah, yeah.
So he would remain a two-time winner. Andre is from Thomastown. G'day, Andre.
G'day, boys. Look, I've got a bit of a problem, and the problem is this. 99% of media and awards are the best player. There is
all of them are. All of them are.
Award that is best and fairest.
Correct.
And that is Brownlow.
Not even club. You know when we
if
say...
If you don't want it to be fairest, well, then it changes the medal. And also, if someone broke a law of a season in the past that doesn't exist now, that's irrelevant. When that occurred under those rules and in that environment, the law was broken, right? And the bottom line is, it is the only, the unique, the one and only medal that is best and fairest.
It is. True.
Well, it's actually, they call it fairest and best, I think.
If you don't want fairest, drop the fairest and just... It'd be like the Herald Sun Award.
Well, that's what I say to
no,
Kevin.
Well, it should be out. I mean, let's face it, no matter what happens on the field, even if an umpire reports someone, he still gives them the votes for the game if he thinks they're the best player on the ground, because he doesn't know whether or not they're actually going to be rubbed out or not. But in the past also, you've got to remember, Andre, that the rule was that if you won the Brownlow Medal and there was a tie, there would be a countback, and the countback would decide who was the best and fairest player over that year,
and
depending
changed,
on the number of threes, two,
that.
And one.
Yep.
And a lot of, I think there might have been seven or eight players may have lost the Brownlow
yep.
because they tied, but they didn't have the number of three votes as the winner.
Yep.
Now, we changed that because we thought, you know what, it's wrong.
Yeah,
we it's still just
call,
wrong.
What's really funny is we still call club best and fairest, and the heaps of blokes get rubbed out and still win their own club's
Greg,
championship award.
Greg, do you think that anyone at an AFL club, when they're actually giving votes, they're actually going through their mind whether or not, Dustin Martin, was he our fairest player today playing for the Tigers?
Well, it's called the best
clubs and fairest. Clubs don't take on board
I know
the
that.
Criteria
I'm
of
just
fairest.
Saying, we refer to them as best and fairest awards.
That's what I'm saying. It's archaic. A break. All that fairness stuff, Greg, goes back to the old English aristocracy, you know, and the honour in those days. You know, you throw a glove because you've hurt my honour and it's not fair. So we'll duel at 5 o'clock in the morning. We'll take 10 paces and we'll turn around and shoot each other.
I should duel today.
That's
too.
The era where the fairest part came from
I
for the Brownlow
duel.
Medal.
No cosy fireplaces.
I might
no
talk
four
about,
big screens to watch tonight.
I might talk
I'm out
about
of
that.
Loop.
I might talk about that with DC. The silliest actions
have a good
in history
weekend.
By man. Catch you, Greg.